I'd like you to start our sobit tonight, but I have a personal request, and that is that as a starting point, you pick up on what you heard in Daddy's words this afternoon.
What I heard in his words this afternoon is someone who is speaking from a deep place of knowing that he's part of something much greater than himself, that...
Can you all hear?
That he's part of this great ocean, and he really is that, you know, he's that it's not just an individual speaking, but he's sort of representing something infinite. I also heard that the love that is the kind of love when you feel it from someone, you just want to be with that person for the rest of your life. You don't want to ever leave their side. You know, that kind of acceptance and a feeling of belonging. You know, that quality of a person who really embraces you. And you just feel like you're like in your mother's arms, you know, that kind of feeling. And also I heard a real sense of what Tawheed is or means. That he is someone who really is living at an integrated center and is able to accept and be part of whatever he is and whatever he's in, he is part of that. And I think that's one of the great meanings of Tawheed, is to, you know, not to be comparing and liking this and not liking that, or, you know, he just accepts. He's able to be part of whatever he is. Those are the major things I heard in what he said.
Keep talking. Let's hear the minor things.
Is this a test or what?
This is Tawheed.
For me personally, also I heard the genuine voice of the Prophet in what he was saying. That I could sense the chain. That love was coming from a very deep center in his heart, which is directly connected through Mawlana and through all of the great sheikhs back to the Prophet. I just knew that somehow. That it's as if you're sitting and listening to the Prophet talking. Or what it would have been in his sahbah. He also, when he said, I think the opening of his talk was that it's no coincidence that he's there with the people he's with, that it's all part of something that is, you know, intricately and carefully balanced and destined, as he said, destiny, I think is what he said, right? That it's, he didn't just happen to be there, he knew his place and he knew his time. He was that at that level of awareness that, you know, he was being called at that moment for a specific service, and he was awake to that. He wasn't just sitting like me here talking. Yeah.
You're just an accident. You can ask him questions or respond as you like.
I remember one point he said something about you're never separate from God, and yet there's this experience of longing and separation. Could you say something about that?
What would you like me to say about that?
Whatever you understood him to infer or mean by that.
My understanding is that it's the knowing that we are, you know, very close to, or God is very close to us, that creates the longing in us to get closer. That's the force or the power that keeps pulling us and increasing the longing in our hearts. The taste of knowing that God is near. Yes.
Sulaiman Dede seemed to be quoting a few times from the ayat in the Quran. He kept referencing back to that, saying it in slightly different ways. The ayat was this, "He is with you wherever you are." He seemed to be paraphrasing that ayat a few different times during the readings.
Yeah, it seems like he was a lot of what he was saying. You could relate it to ayahs and also sayings of the Prophet, and, you know, but it was from him. Mm-hmm. He wasn't quoting, you know. Mm-hmm. It was coming from a genuine place of just how he is living and experiencing it.
He said that there's nothing bad. There's nothing bad. We create the ugly. That even when we're given something like a sickness, it's for our development. It's for our benefit in some way.
Yeah. I was reading in the Methna, in book three of the Methnawi, a story relating to that a little bit about the farmer or the villager who wanted to learn the language of the animals. And you know the story? This villager went to Moses and said, "Teach me the language of the animals because I'm tired of the speech of people. All they talk nonsense, and just I think the animals would be more interesting." So Moses told him, "You're not ready for something like this. It won't work for you." And he pleaded and pleaded, and then God finally told Moses, "Tell him what he wants. Teach him what he wants." And Moses protested a little bit. He said, "But it's going to destroy him." He said, "Just give him a little bit. Just a little bit to get him going." So he says, "Okay, I'm going to teach you the speech of the donkey, the dog and the rooster. You'll know how to understand those two. That's a start for you." So he thanks him, and he learns it, and he runs back to his farm, and he listens to, he has a rooster and he has a dog, and he has a bunch of animals. So he overhears the dog and the rooster arguing because the rooster ate all of the breadcrumbs, didn't leave anything for the dog. And he goes, "Come on, this is the only place I can eat anything. You can run around and eat corn and all this stuff. My only chance to eat is the crumbs falling off the table." And he took them all. He said, "Don't worry, tomorrow you'll have a feast." He says, "Wow." He said, "Because the mule is going to die tomorrow. So you're going to have plenty of meat to eat." And the farmer hears this and he says, "The mule is going to die." He goes and sells it before it dies, So, pockets a nice profit, escaped disaster. And he starts getting more interested in what these animals are saying. So he starts eavesdropping on them again. And the next day, the same thing happens. The rooster eats all the crumbs, and the dog says, "You ate them all again." He said, "Don't worry, you'll have a feast." He says, "That's what we told me yesterday." And he sold the mule before it died. I didn't get anything. "So don't worry, the horse is going to die tomorrow." And the farmer hears and does exactly the same. He sells the horse before it dies. And then the ox goes, and the dog can't get anything. And the man is feeling like, this is perfect. I don't have to, I can avoid all disasters, and I can just be very, very safe. Thank God. Thank God I asked for this, and I learned the language that I needed to learn. Now I'm in good shape. Then the next day he's listening, and the dog is really annoyed with the rooster because, he's been 3 days and hasn't eaten anything. And the rooster says, "Don't worry, tomorrow you're going to have a huge feast." He said, "Now what? What's that going to be? What's going to die next?" He said, "The master is going to die next." He said, and at the funeral you'll have plenty to eat." He said he saved himself from material disaster, but he spilled his own blood. And the man heard this and panicked. He ran to Moses. He said, "Help, I'm going to die tomorrow. What do I do?" He said, "Go sell yourself." So Maulana used that I think it's related to what we're talking about, is that the man, by not accepting what was meant to be and thinking that he's clever by avoiding it, built up for the greatest of disasters for himself, by not seeing good in whatever happens and trying to avoid it and scheme and connive to beat destiny, basically. He ended up creating a worst destiny for himself.
And what about the ayat that says, "And God has purchased"? Maybe there's still a chance to for that last chance in the Quran. It says God has purchased the souls of the faithful
and their wealth.
And what?
And their wealth.
And their wealth. Yeah. Say something about that.
Can I say a little bit more about the ayah first? The ayah starts out with that God has purchased from the faithful their souls and their wealth in exchange for paradise. He says, they slay and are slain in God's way. And then he goes on to describe who these slayers are, the qualities of these slayers. And these slayers are not some champion warriors with swords and axes, actually slaying, but they're the people who are patient and seeking forgiveness and constantly in prayer and all of the qualities of that we know about. So the purchase and the slaying and the and being slayed has nothing to do with what we associate with war and things like that. It has something else, has a different meaning. The first time that this became very clear to me was on a trip to Istanbul. at the Blue Mosque. We were there for dawn prayer, and the Imam read it. He recited that this particular ayah, and just suddenly it was clear what he was saying, what this ayah was really saying. Before it meant to me war, and, you know, I just associated it with physical things. It's only for some reason it sounded completely different when he was reciting it, and it became very clear what this is about. And it changed a lot of my understanding about what it means to really dedicate oneself to this path.
Just consider for a moment deeply what we have to be thankful for. And if our gratitude is sincere, if our awareness of what we have to be grateful for is adequate, we understand that it's the work of God to bring us everything that is our lives, and that we can be grateful for all of it, then is it possible to experience peace, meaning tranquility, repose, reconciliation, peace? So if gratitude can bring us to peace, what does peace bring us to? Amen.